On this episode of Baseball Barbecast, the Yankees and the Mets are disasters. Should they fold as franchises? Should they move to Nashville? Should they merge? Is there enough talent on these rosters for the sport of baseball to survive in the Big Apple? We'll get into that and a whole lot more on this weekend recap episode of Baseball Barbecast. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbecast, the only baseball podcast in the world willing to admit that it's probably been talking a little bit too much about the Los Angeles Dodgers. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And on this episode, I don't even know her.
We are only going to allot about probably like 85 seconds to the Dodgers on this episode. They will show up later on. However, we have five sweeps to recap from the weekend, including a mop, but that is not going to be our opener. Our opener is a city full of losers.
Start spreading the blues is a headline that I'm sure has been run at least 85 times in the city of New York. The Big Apple this weekend went rotten. The baseball side of the Zoran Mamdani era is off to a disastrous start as the New York Yankees and New York Mets combined to go goose egg and six, nil and six, 0-6 over the weekend. Both were recipients of sweeps. The Yankees at their home away from home in Tampa under the Trop, and the Mets at home against a team with no first name. Things are not peachy right now in the city that has no ability to sleep. The season is young. It is April 13th. But if there's one thing I know, having lived in New York for nearly a decade, it's that these are reasonable, patient fan bases willing to see the bigger picture at every turn.
Yeah, you way ahead of me on the Zoran joke. I was going to say, I know he's focused on getting rid of the scaffolding. Thought that was an interesting yeah. point that Big Z was making. But I think he needs to focus on helping these teams to learn how to hit. As the New York Yankees and New York Mets this weekend with a fairly pathetic collective offensive showing. Now, you might say, well, guys, why are you so focused on these New York teams and how bad they are at baseball? Well, why don't you give some credit to the teams that beat them? Well, let's do that. How did this happen? Let's begin at the Trop, the Tampa Bay Rays. Back where they belong, with a roof, not at a stadium with a bunch of Yankees logos. With
the yeah. sun is the sun oh, is yeah. shining through at the Trop. New roof, new me. If there's one thing I know about someone who takes antidepressants every morning, it's that a little bright light goes a long way, and you can see that blossoming happening to this Rays ball club, which was very frisky over the weekend.
Interesting contrast as they kind of gutted out three close wins, whereas the A's just kind of kicked the Mets' ass. But let's stay in the Trop for now. As game one, we had Luis Gil making his season debut coming off the injured list, and he wasn't very good. But Steven Matz, who's now starting for the Tampa Bay Rays, was quite good. Ben Rice, who was not on the starting lineup to face Steven Matz, even though Aaron Boone is like, he's going to start against all the lefties. This was a day off for him, but Ben Rice still found a way to contribute as he hits a pinch hit home run later. Yandy homers as well. He has been fantastic. And the Rays win the opener 5-3. Game two on Saturday, Max Fried goes 8 innings. Surely that's enough. Nope. David Bednar gets walked off in the bottom of the 10th on a very goofy Jonathan Aranda fielder's choice, which we will get back to shortly, as the Rays walk it off 5-4 in 10 innings. And then on Sunday, Drew Rasmussen, fresh off the paternity list. Congratulations to the Rasmussen family, their second child. 6 innings, 1 hit, no runs. And Cam Schlittler just kind of gets singled to death. And Judge, his 4th home run of the season in the 9th, is too little too late. As the Rays win another close one. They hold on 5-4, which brings the Yankees to an L5 and a tie atop the American League East at 8-7, which is also the record of every other team in certainly the American League, but also in Major League Baseball. The New York Yankees are hitting .202 as a team. That is 28th in MLB, ahead of only Seattle and the Chicago White Sox. And even though their run differential is still plus 21 because they have only lost one-run games, six of their seven losses are one run or by one run. The other one is by two runs. They are now not looking as awesome as we thought. But I, as someone who is doing the power rankings this week, am still going to rank the Yankees quite highly. But this was certainly a frustrating weekend at the bare minimum for the Bronx Bombers.
When the Yankees don't hit, and this has been true for years, it presents a very odd situation to try and analyze, because this team a year ago and for quite a while has been objectively excellent at hitting the baseball. And so over any small sample within our silly sport, a team can get a little cold. A team can have a tough stretch. And so I don't think that this is indicative of this Yankees offense. Like, these players are too good for this offense to be bad. I'm willing to be proven wrong in that over the long haul. But if you're asking me what about the New York Yankees I'm worried about, the lineup is not something I'm worried about. Now, the bottom of the lineup is something that I am a little bit worried about, just because of how bad Ryan McMahon has looked, how bad Jose Caballero has looked. Caballero, dude, he had it. He had the world in his fingertips. He had the shortstop job for the taking as Anthony Volpe started the season on the IL. And instead of taking the bull by the horns, he took the bull by the butt. What's the opposite of that? The bull taking you by its horns.
Yeah, the bull took him.
And it's
the bull took him.
Bull, yeah, took that's him. What happened. Bull took him far away. It probably will take him to the bench whenever Anthony Volpe gets back. But even if the bottom of the lineup is fine, and there was so much consternation last year about the bottom of this lineup, and when you look at the numbers, it was like a pretty decent bottom of the order. Everyone's bottom of the order is not very good. That's why they're hitting the bottom, usually, most teams. And the Yankees just have enough juice at the top that they will eventually, over the long haul, overcome it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that you look at the top and you're like, okay, well, Judge has been okay, but he's hitting .218. The whole thing last year was like, yeah, he hits all the home runs, but he's also winning the batting title. So small sample, that hasn't really happened yet. Ben Rice is the star of the show. He has been absolutely unbelievable. Trent Grisham is walking, but he is not hitting. So at some point, he's probably going to have to do a little bit more of the hitting. But before we come back to, we should talk about the Jazz Chisholm post-game experience. But before we come back to that, I do want to at least acknowledge, like, what's going right with the Rays? Because this was a team that I think we had a very difficult time projecting for this season, even if we looked at the big picture and said, this is probably a transition year for them. How badly do they want to win? Their offseason was very odd. They did a lot, but it was like, did they get better? They brought in some projects. They cleared the room for some younger players. And I think that's the most exciting part so far. Chandler Simpson. I mean, what a treat. This has been. Because he got a lot of run last year, and it was not great. And now he's hitting .411, and he's got seven steals, and he's getting on base. He's playing a much better left field. His defensive numbers have improved dramatically. And just such a fun player to tune in to watch if you're if you're a Rays fan. And that by itself, I think, is exciting.
So entertaining. Just a quick story. So you know when you're watching a baseball game with someone that does not watch baseball and a player pops up on the screen and you're like, this player does that. And then like 90% of the time, the player doesn't do the thing the player does, because that's how our sport works, right? On Saturday night, I was sitting outside with my wife. I had the Yanks Rays game on the TV, and Chandler Simpson comes up in the bottom of the 10th with a runner on second base to start the inning, right? And I'm like, you see this guy? He's the fastest player in the league. Immediately bunts for a hit. Immediately. And you've had these moments, I'm sure, where it was great. It was amazing. She was like, that's great. That's entertaining. I like the bunts. And so Chandler Simpson really, like, how is he going to hit .400 all year? No. If he hits 100, that's amazing. If he hits 275 with his speed, it's going to provide a lot of value for the Rays. The key thing with them, Yandy is raking. Drew Rasmussen is so freaking good. Probably the most underrated starter in the sport. And then Junior Caminero really hasn't even gotten rolling yet. But I think we maybe underrated what the move back into the Trop could mean from just like an energy vibes,
yes,
morale perspective, where playing in someone else's house every day. And, you know, if you're crashing on your buddy's couch for a year, you're probably going to have a worse time than if you're sleeping at home.
Yeah, I think that makes a difference. I think the weirdest thing about them, you mentioned Caminero hasn't really gotten going. I often reference one of the best features on Fangraphs is where you can kind of see their team rankings and hitting, starting pitching, bullpen and fielding just on their roster research page. Their bullpen has been atrocious. We're just so used to the Rays bullpen just automatically being good no matter who's pitching. 29th in bullpen ERA, first in rotation whip, top 10 in a lot of other categories. And their offense has been top 10 as well, which is something that we weren't necessarily expecting with their move back to the Trop. So I don't expect that to sustain necessarily. But I'm intrigued by the split confident right now between the rotation and the bullpen. Yeah.
I feel pretty confident this team's not going to suck. Like, I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs, but they're definitely not going to suck. And I think with the offseason they had, that was in the realm of possibility. Maybe it never is because that's just the Rays don't ever suck. They can't really bottom out that low. But this team has, I think, a little more bite to it than we thought. Let's move over to the Jazz stuff. So I'm going to try to explain this best I can. Weird play ends the proceedings on Saturday night. Bases loaded, one out, infield chopper, like roller to Jazz with the infield in. The obvious play is to field it and go home right away to get the force out, right? But you could always try and turn it to end the inning and get at winning runs on third, right? So, but Jazz kind of bobbles the initial play, tries to tag the runner, falls to his knees, throws it away. It was more of a physical mistake on the field than a mental one. It was not a decision-making issue. It was he did not feel the ball issue. It soon became a decision-making issue when after the game and he was asked about the final play. Jazz just unprompted told everybody he didn't know the rules. He was like asked reporters, hey, like if I tag him, I throw it at first, it goes back to second. Is that a double play? Does that count? Does a run score? And everyone was like, what? And I don't care about this at all.
I don't either.
Okay. Does it change? If someone that wasn't Jazz had done this, it would alter the way that I think about how they interact with people, right? Like if Anthony Volpe had said this or Ryan McMahon had said this, I'd be like, oh, that was a little odd for them to say. Jazz just says stuff all the time. He is brutally honest. A lot of the time that makes him very likable. And this particular instance, it came across as weird and unnecessarily honest. But I don't think this means he doesn't know what's going on all the time. As Aaron Boone said, he's not a dumb guy. I believe that. I agree with that. Multiple things can be true. Next time, Jazz, don't admit you don't know the rules. Even if you do, it's just, I'm not a PR director. I don't do PR. But that's just my advice. No. So I'm saying.
While this play to end the game was not considered an error, this was an error. This was an unforced error. I don't care about it.
Scoring
it
change.
Any less of Jazz, but totally unnecessary to say this, but Jazz just says stuff. However, if Jazz said this after, like, it was a weird play, but the Yankees won and Jazz had a 140 OPS plus with five homers and six steals, we'd be like, oh, Jazz, haha. That's not the case because Jazz has been very bad and is just like Jazz bad. He's been burning challenges left and right for no good reason, which is a whole other thing. And so it's not the time to publicly admit that you're maybe confused about the rules, but I don't really take too much of it. Other than that. Okay. Anything else on the Yankees before we go? Yeah.
Yeah, this is via Chris Kirschner at The Athletic. A quote from Aaron Boone. Quote, last year is last year. We got to do it. Last year's over with. This is a new group, a new opportunity. So it's not, though. It's not a new group. It's I understand what Boone is saying. It's a new year, you know, fresh start. What we've accomplished in the past doesn't impact what we do in the future. Great. All good coach speak. Quite literally not a new group. Like, that's the whole bit here for the Yankees. Hey, is that you brought everybody back.
You know who I was reminded that is even on the Yankees this weekend? Randall Grichuk, who's 0 for 12. That's a new face. There's some fresh blood there.
Can you imagine Boone?
He's right.
Boone was like, this is a new group. We got Randall Grichuk in the fold. New opportunity.
And as you mentioned, literally nobody else. Oh, I guess Ryan Weathers. Ryan Weathers is interesting. But no, Boone is right. Randall Grichuk was not here to go 0 for 12 with six strikeouts to start the season. Okay, let's go to the New York Mets, whose run differential is not plus 21, and who are not tied for first place. While their record is not that dissimilar at 7-9, they are in last in the NL East after being swept at home by the YOLO County A's. Last place. Yep. Bunch of losers. Let's go to the weekend. What happened? Well, game one, Clay Holmes pitched okay, and then he left with hamstring tightness. But that wasn't that big of a deal, because the bigger problem is that he is going to make his next start. Did I see that? We're fine there?
Yeah.
We're chilling? Okay. Okay, that's good. Don't worry. Plenty more injury talk coming
tightness.
On. Oh, yo, my hamstring's tight.
My hamstring's tight.
Don't worry, friends. We have plenty more concerning injury the discussion later on in this podcast, but not necessarily with the Mets. The bigger problem for them is that they can't hit. Jeff McNeil is back in Queens. He gets a nice ovation. I don't know if his former teammates were giving him an ovation, but the fans were certainly happy to see Jeff McNeil. But the A's win the opener. 4-0. Game two, Kodai Senga. He's throwing harder. We're feeling better. Kodai Senga, Juan Soto spring training. He's our ace. This guy, he could be a difference maker, blah, blah, blah. 7 earned runs. Not ideal. The Mets
less
battle back
ace,
to make it.
More ass.
Yeah.
More
yes.
ass
well
than
said.
Ace. There you go.
More New York Post headlines for Jake Mintz. Well done. The Mets battle back. They come back at 7-6, and you're like, okay, maybe this is actually going to be the win that turns around the season. No. Luke Weaver comes in. He allows 4 runs. And Tyler Soderstrom has 2 homers. A's win 11-6. Francisco Lindor had another very strange play where he very clearly should have been in position to field a double play. And he just kind of wandered to the other side of second base. I don't know what's going on with him. Game three, it's like, okay, maybe we can salvage here. No, that is not what happened. Aaron Civale dominates. Nick Kurtz hits his first home run. Dude. And that is enough, because while the Freddy Peralta, Sean Manaea piggyback was quite good, the Mets offense continues to struggle as the A's win 1-0. Jared Young is batting third. That was probably not the plan at the outset of the season. And while Juan Soto is technically the only one injured, I guess Jorge Polanco is also injured, but he's just playing through it. It does turn out that Juan Soto hides a lot. He does so much for everything that you're doing. It's not just his own production. He makes everybody better, and now he is indirectly making everybody worse by sitting on the bench waiting for his calf to feel better.
Welcome to our podcast, where we tell you that Juan Soto is an important piece of the New York Mets. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you next week. Anytime Aaron Civale, a friend of the program, very nice guy, throws 5 2/3 scoreless at your place, it's probably had a bad day at the plate. You know, like,
yeah,
5 2/3 and 2 earned runs, maybe 5 2 scoreless. Oh boy. The New York Mets had 3 extra base hits all weekend long. All 3 of those were homers. They did not hit a single double against the Athletics. And I think I'm a little bit more concerned about the Mets than I am about the Yankees. Am I concerned about either of them?
Yes.
Over the long haul, way more concerned about the Mets.
Yeah, over the long haul, I'm not dooming their season, just relatively, yeah.
Tons of teams are starting slow. Okay, this happens every year. 7-9 is effectively the same as 9-7 when it's all said and done. The key to April is to make it to May without any major injuries and your vibes relatively intact, okay? There's a long way to go. However, what is important to understand about the Mets is the way that they finish 2025 is a shadow to what is going on in 2026. Even though Pobo David Stearns went out over the winter, kudos to him, and refreshed, revitalized his roster with a bunch of new faces, out with the old, in with the new. The vibe is the same here. And even if the players, because a lot of them are new, aren't feeling that carryover, the fan base certainly is. And they are hearing a lot of the same answers from the players. They are seeing a lot of the same issues, right? And I am sympathetic to Mets fans who are like, why is this any different? You just put a new coat of paint on a similar problem. And it's weird because this is kind of what happened last year, where the vibe magic of the 2024 OMG Mets carried over through the first 2 months of the 2025 season, where they were just rolling and everything was beautiful and hunky-dory, and then it all went to crap. So I think the Mets will pull themselves out of this. I really do. But when you look at this team, you have to consider what happened a year ago.
Yeah. I think, as always, it's an optics situation for a lot of these teams. When your new guys are floundering, it's not awesome. Luis Robert Jr. has been terrific. Devin Williams has been terrific. But when Bo is struggling to this degree, when, frankly, Carson Benj, after homering in his debut, has not exactly contributed very much recently. Polanco is, you're just hearing more about his Achilles than what he's doing in the game. That's not particularly exciting. Even if he's gritting it out, that's not feeling awesome. And it doesn't seem like Juan Soto is going to be out for that long, but you do see the difference, as we mentioned. And Francisco Lindor is going to have to start playing better. I don't really know how else to say that, because that was the one thing that you felt like you could bank amid all of the chaos of the roster being turned over. Francisco Lindor was still an unbelievable baseball player for the entirety of last season. And so far this year, on both sides of the ball, it has just looked bad. And I don't know if we go back to the hamate, if that's something we have to revisit.
So this is the thing, man.
But I don't know.
Here's, if Francisco Lindor was hitting okay and there was no power, I would say that's probably the hamate. But Francisco Lindor is just not hitting at all, really. And the defense and all of it just seems off. He seems unplugged. He seems scattered. He does not seem to be the same player mentally that he was. One of my favorite ever quotes from a ball player, a quote that I actually think about all the time in my own life, is last year at the All-Star game, Lindor said, "I'm not motivated, I'm disciplined," right? Motivation comes and goes, discipline stays. And I think you can critique that and say, oh, you should be motivated. But like, you know, you do this 162 times a year, like you got to just be, discipline's more important. He, for whatever reason, seems to have lost an element of that in the early going. I will bet on the player and the person and think that it will figure itself out. But it is very weird. It is very odd. And it is the first time this season, to be honest with you, Jordan, I'm mad, sad, whatever, that I'm not in New York to witness this and get a better understanding for it. You know, I'm in DC. I'm away from the action. I'm, you know, forced to sit with the juggernaut wagon Nats instead. But I am very curious about what has gone sideways in the early going with Lindor.
Before we take a break, let's give a hearty nod to the A's, who just
5-1 roadie
in New York. How about that? We didn't really get to talk about them going into New York last week. You're going to Yankee Stadium last week and winning a couple close games, including a 1-0 shutout, finishing both series with 1-0 shutouts. It's like, these are not the kinds of games I think we expected the A's to win. Maybe this is something that they can do away from Sacramento, which, credit to them. It is still kind of a lopsided team in terms of who is performing and who is still playing very poorly. But I got to give you some credit. Max Muncy, while his plate discipline has not exactly been awesome, but the other Max Muncy is certainly hitting. And for an A's lineup that it hasn't totally gotten going with the Kurtzes, and Jacob Wilson has really been struggling. Denzel Clark, Lawrence Butler, Brent Rooker's now on the injured list, which is not great. They're going to have some pitchers step up if they are going to hang around here. And on this road trip, that is definitely what happened. So shouts out to Aaron Civale and Jeffrey Springs and some of these pitchers who are throwing the ball quite well. All right, let's take a break. When we return, we got three more sweeps, including a mop. We'll be right back.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. My floor is dirty. Do you have any recommendations about how to rectify that situation?
Sounds like it's a little bit more serious. It's not just a little bit of stuff that you
can sweep
easily. No, we're going to have to do something a little bit more serious. Well, might I recommend the mop provided by the San Diego Padres? Yeah, let's talk about it. How mop, sweep, whatever you want to call it, it is.
Clean up, everybody, everywhere.
There is no shame in getting swept. I never got swept. You guys got swept.
The Colorado Rockies rolled into the weekend with good vibes and purple uniforms. And they left San Diego feeling like their old selves as the Padres took all four games at home against the Colorado Rockies for our second mop of the season, our first weekend mop. We got a Xander Bogaerts walk-off grand slam on Thursday. We got a Gavin Sheets three-run walk-off homer, his second of the game, and a lovely Holy Sheets call on the Padres broadcast. Game three on Saturday. Mickey Moe, two ding-dongs for the Rockies, not enough. Machado with Laureano. Homer for San Diego. Pods win 9-5. Tatis starts at second base in that one. Off day for Bogaerts. Cronenworth moving over to short. Tatis coming in from right. Tatis at second. Cronenworth at short. Castellanos in right. And then you win. Wow. Playing with fire. Game four. Nick Pivetta leaves after three perfect innings with elbow stiffness, which is not a good phrase to say. But the Rockies had starting pitching injuries too. Kyle Freeland scratched last moment. Vayente Beozo, friend of the program, comes in, allows three long balls, and the Padres win 7-2. Lot to take away here. I would just like to zoom in on Mason Miller, who pitched in game one and two of the series, not in game three and four. Mason Miller is breaking the sport. If you're angry about the Los Angeles Dodgers and their deep-pocketed ways, well, you should be even more furious about Mason Miller and his mind-bending, law-breaking fastball and his slider, which he's actually throwing more often than his fastball. Don't tell people that. They don't want to hear it. Mason Miller has faced 24 hitters so far this season. Okay, 24. 19 of them have struck out. 19 of the 24 hitters he has faced have struck out. 18 of that 19 struck out swinging. Okay? Struck out swinging. So 18 swinging strikeouts of 24 hitters. 19 strikeouts total. Those other five plate appearances were a walk, a Luis Arraez single that is the only hit. I love that it's Luis Arraez. Perfect. Elliot Ramos pop out. Jake Mangum ground out. Riley Green fly out. That is Mason Miller. That is a 79.2 strikeout rate, which is obviously, if it sustains, would beat the record. He is as automatic as I can remember a pitcher being in one inning in our baseball watching lives, right?
In terms of, like, we've had closers. Obviously, Mariano Rivera was not striking out 79% of posting batters, but we've had closers more recently. It usually does involve two or three strikeouts, you know, Chapman at his peak, Kimbrel at his peak, whatever. Mason Miller's throwing strikes. It's not just, that sounds obvious because he's striking guys out, but he is not walking guys. How many walks does he have this season?
One.
Okay. I want to focus on the slider. Because when I watch him, I think about a very basic tenet of just like thinking about what it means to hit. And especially as someone who doesn't, who didn't play at a high level at all.
Especially as someone who doesn't and did not ever hit.
Exactly. But in a very basic sense, you think, okay, why is it hard to hit? Well, there's the fact that the baseball is moving fast and in a lot of directions that you don't know. But in an even more simple sense, it's that you don't know what is coming most of the time, unless you're cheating. Okay. And when you combine, when you have that and you have a pitcher that throws 103 miles an hour, it is the most obvious thing, but also I think he is weaponizing it better than I've really ever seen, which is every swing on a slider looks like someone that is gearing up for 103. And I know it's just those two pitches, although he has dabbled with his changeup, which is also terrifying. The slider is 87 and has crazy movement, but it you just have to imagine in a very simple sense, when you step in the box against Mason Miller, what are you thinking? This guy's about to throw 104 miles an hour. I have to be ready. And as you mentioned, he has thrown the slider more often, and guys are just whiffing in ways that you really, even the best hitters, you're not seeing them miss this badly on these sliders. And I just, every time I see it, I'm like, well, yeah, they're probably thinking I need to be ready for 104.
He's making people look like little leaguers, man. And you mentioned the slider has a lot of movement. It's not just that it has a lot of movement. I mean, if you go, if you plot it out and you look at the pitches in baseball, the sliders, right, with the most drop and break, it is top three, top four in the sport in terms of having both of those attributes. And he's throwing it at 87 and a half, and he's throwing 103, and so you have to gear up for that. It is pure dominance. He is incredible. I'm happy that he's going to be pitching, that he has been pitching meaningful innings, with all due respect to the Athletics. Like, seeing Mason Miller come out of the bullpen in a packed Petco Park with his intro and a sold out crowd fits what that guy is at this point in his career. And it's not going to last forever, because I don't know what Mason Miller throwing 98 looks like. You know what I mean? However, we are experiencing quite a special run here. And so I would say to you, our wonderful listeners, to the ball fans of America, I know it's late on the East Coast, but like, if Mason Miller, if it's a close Padres game, this is as guaranteed have to tune in as we have in the sport right now.
Yeah. And it won't be the last time we talk about Mason Miller this year. So we'll spend more time, as we have in past podcasts, also marveling at the fact that this dude pitched at Waynesburg. I just, as someone who attended another D3 baseball game yesterday, I cannot wrap my mind around it. I understand the story. He couldn't keep weight on because he found out he had diabetes. That's an amazing turn of events. And he's like, okay, now I know how to keep my body in a better shape. I transferred to Gardner-Webb. It's not like he transferred to LSU. He transfers to Gardner-Webb. He's throwing 99 there. And now he's one of the greatest closers we've ever seen in a small batter-to-batter sample.
It's not just that he went from D3 baseball, and with all due respect, like, not a powerhouse Division III baseball program, just like a relatively run-of-the-mill Division III baseball program. And he did not turn into like a nice arm, right? He didn't become
that would have been amazing.
Like, that would have been amazing. He didn't turn into Yaramil Geraldo or, you know, Dickie Lovelady, or, you know, even, you know, Ryan Stanek. He is the most physically imposing, overpowering, dominant arm in the entire sport. And he was playing his freshman baseball games in front of, you know, everyone's parents and nobody else. It is one of the most remarkable things about our sport right now.
Yeah.
It is Mason Miller. Yep. Two other sweeps to get to before we take another break. Detroit Tigers, fresh off a mop. They got mopped. Their floor was wet, and they did a quick dry so that they could go ahead, break the brooms out, sweep the Marlins out of Detroit. Game one on Friday, Cater Montero, six scoreless innings. Javi Baez, homer. He's back in center field because there was a scary collision with Parker Meadows and Riley Green. Whatever. Tigers win that one 2-0. Game two, Casey Mize was good. Riley Green hits his first of the year, 6-1 Detroit. Game three shaped up to be a real fun pitcher's duel. Tarik Skubal against Sandy Alcantara, the two-time reigning Cy Young, and the rejuvenated 2022 Cy Young for Miami. Sandy was not good. He allowed 7 earned runs, including the first home run of Kevin McGonigal's career. Skubal, 6 2/3, allowed one inning. 6 2/3, allowed one run. Tigers win 8-2. The Skubal's pitch data is a little odd right now. He's not throwing quite as hard as he was to this point last year. He's cutting the ball a little bit more, and he's using the fastball at a higher rate than he had in the past. That's all nitpicky, probably. He is still Tarek Skubal, and he showed us that yesterday.
That's an interesting note. I have not really dug into Skubal at all this season because he
had
the one not
friend of the program,
not so good outing.
Friend of the program, Lance Brodowski, pitcher notes every morning in the inbox. One of the best things I pay for. Had a great thing this morning about Tarek Skubal's here.
There you go. I received those notes as well. I just didn't get to them yet today. So that is a good note. And I what I was going to say about him is just, on one hand, it's small sample. It's how is this intentional? Is this different? Whatever. When your standard is the best pitcher in the sport, even anything less than that, when you have the one bad outing in Minnesota and your ERA looks normal as opposed to superhuman, you kind of start wondering, like, all right, we good? We doing okay? Doing okay, Tarek Skubal? Because the reality is, if he does want to win a third straight Cy Young, you do got to be pretty close to your A game most times. So, long way to go. Still can totally win it. But that is an interesting note that I will have to dig into. As for the rest of the Tigers, I think there are still a lot of questions about this offense, frankly. We talk about carryover from last season with teams like the Mets, teams like the Yankees. This offense was putrid for the second half and into October last year. And they didn't change anything, right? They also were like, you know what? We're good. Kevin McGonigal will save us. So far, Kevin McGonigal kind of saving them. He's been basically their best hitter. Colt Keith has also been hitting. But there's certainly some questions about this offense. You know, in terms of where they rank right now, and this is perfectly fine. But you're just not totally seeing it all come together. And I think right now the pitching has also been relatively disappointing. This weekend was not the case. Everyone kind of showed up and got the job done. A necessary course correction for the Tigers. I think they have to feel pretty good about that. And for the Marlins, who are at 500 and technically in second place in the NL East, they are a weird team that I do not have any idea how good they are.
Because not ready to wrangle
their offense before this year was, or before this series, had been pretty good. This was obviously not a particularly good offensive showing. But speaking of offense, now we go to our final sweep of the weekend. Okay, anything else on Miami? Yeah.
You can't transition before I get a chance to speak my truth.
Oh, about the
Tarek
fish.
Tarek Skubal.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, no, not about the fish.
Never mind.
Tarek Skubal slated to throw Saturday in Boston. Garrett Crochet slated to throw tonight and then again on Sunday. There's a little bit of rain in the forecast in Detroit this week for their series against the Royals. Everyone, pray for rain. We get, you know, everyone in the Detroit rotation moves back a day. And we get Skubal against Crochet next Sunday. Sign me up. That would be wonderful.
That would be cool. Maybe we will. I mean, you know, Framber Crochet, not so bad. But yeah, Skubal Crochet would be terrific. All right, let's get to our last sweep. Oh, baby. I know there are some people listening to this podcast that were really hoping we were going to lead with this. And to be honest, like, if we're really kind of looking at teams, you know, say Mets and Yankees, you know, we thought you guys were going to be near the top of the sport. What's going on? Well, the Milwaukee Brewers, after coming out of the gate hot, are not playing very good baseball, as they too have lost five in a row. That includes losing the series last week against the Red Sox, right? They lost the two games to finish that series in Boston. And then they go home to welcome the Washington Nationals, who just kind of put it on them for three games, three very strange games. But the Brewers looked like a bad baseball team for a lot of these games. As the first game, we get a couple James Wood rocket doubles. He had both of them were 115 exit velocity. He's heating up, which
He's
is very fun.
Locked
and
in.
Especially.
No. He is not heating up. He is fully en fuego. I think he's hitting 480 or 500 over his last 25 plate appearances, 26 plate appearances or something. He's been unbelievable.
and batting leadoff. So you don't have to wait long to get to check out James Wood. Tune into the Washington Nationals. And yeah, he was kind of kicking the Brewers' ass all weekend. A couple of doubles in those first game. But the highlight of the series opener was one of the more comical half innings I've seen in a long time. Blake Butera decides to just bunt three times, at least two of them seemingly for a hit against Brewers closer Trevor McGill, and he just can't handle any of them. The Brewers defense, which you would think would be one of the things you could count on, could not record an out on three bunts, and the Nats score four runs against McGill without him recording an out. They win that one 7-3. Game two, Foster Griffin goes 5 1/3, allows one hit, no runs. He's been really solid. That is looking like a very nice signing for them. Clayton Beter kind of navigates some trouble in the ninth as they win 3-1. And then in game three, Zach Littell allows three solo home runs. But if there's no one else on base, you can still munch some innings and give your team a chance to win. That's exactly what happens. James Wood hits his fifth homer.
That's why is there?
And that's bullpen bends and does not break. Meanwhile, the Brewers bullpen has a stinker. Angel Zerpa, one of our favorites, allows four earned runs. Yikes. Nationals win 8-6, and they have, by all measures, one of the best offenses in baseball. They rank in top five in runs, in homers, in steals, in OPS, and they're hitting. Their pitching is not good. It's not good. There's no other way to say it. Foster Griffin aside, this has not been an effective pitching staff as we feared. However, they scored enough runs and made enough plays and apparently bunted enough to win this series. Yeah. All three games this series in Milwaukee. A very impressive showing from the Butera boys.
Someone who listens to this show, who is around the Milwaukee Brewers, sent me a text yesterday about the Washington Nationals. I asked what they thought about the Nats, and this person said, they are the 2025 Brewers without pitching. Holy crap, I'm impressed. Abrams looks re-energized. Wood was electric. The Nats' offense is real. And I think it is a very, telling dynamic here that the talent on the position player group was always legit, and that the coaching staff that was there in that front office wasn't getting the most out of that talent for whatever reason. This pitching group just doesn't really have the sauce, and so they're going to give up a lot of runs. But when we look at the Nats lineup, you go up and down it, I mean, it's a lot of guys that were supposed to be good, right? James Wood has been good, top prospect. Luis Garcia, highly rated prospect. Brady House, first round pick. Dalen Lyle, second round pick. CJ Abrams, top five pick, big trade piece. You know, like these are real baseball players, or at least guys that were supposed to be. And so I'm not like shocked that they're figuring it out in a more conducive environment for them. The most encouraging thing to me is CJ Abrams, who looks genuinely rejuvenated. His defense has been a lot better. I went and watched, because I'm a loser, I went and watched every CJ Abrams ground ball opportunity last night. And his only error, in quotes, was a play that Luis Garcia Jr. should have caught. And like he seems more under control. He seems more locked in. And I hope that continues throughout the season. Are the Nats going to make the playoffs? Probably not. Is this offense legitimately entertaining? Absolutely. So Nats fans, just tune in for the Nats innings. Do an errand. Come back when they're hitting again. Do an errand, and you'll have a really lovely season.
Both half innings will probably last a while. So, you know,
Nats are going to play some long games. Nats are going to play some long games.
Lucky you.
You know what this Nats team is? So this guy said that, they're the 2025 Brewers. They're the 2025 A's, is what I think this team is.
Could be. Could be. Very possible. Interesting comparison. James Wood and CJ Abrams. I mean, oh boy. Those are some
the
special
ball that Wood hit out
players.
On Sunday was the furthest pitch inside he's ever hit out for a homer off the plate. Like it was probably like 4 inches in. Highly recommend going to watch that homer if folks haven't yet. It was quite a swing.
Last year, James Wood, came for the strikeout record, single season strikeout record. He's striking out a lot. He was to very start the season, but he's kind of dialed it back in. The strikeout rate right now at 28%. It was 32% last year. He's walking, and the homer you just mentioned, he can hit a lot of different pitches really hard. And that is what makes him, that's what makes him special. James Wood, cheers to you. All right, we're going to take a break. When we return, we've got 10 more series to get to, and we're going to go pretty quickly. We'll be right back. Welcome back to New Baseball Barbacast. 10 series to get to and very little time. Let's go fast and respectfully.
Faster than fast, quicker than quick. I am lightning.
I feel the need for speed.
It's turbo time.
Braves over the Guardians entering this series. These were the two clubs in our beautiful sport without a series loss. Braves took this one. Winning game one, 11-5, homers for Acuna, Olson, Harris. Game two, Parker Messick, 6 2/3, scoreless. Jose Ramirez, homer means he has now home runned against all 29 opponents. He will never get to 30. Although, I guess if you include inner squad in spring training, he has homered against all 30
definitely.
Teams.
Definitely.
Yeah. Definitely homered. Game three, Tanner Bibee bat on Sunday Night Baseball. With all due respect to friend of the program, Jason Benetti, I did not tune in for this one because by the time I got home from the Capitals game yesterday, this was a blowout. Rhys Hoskins, first home run of the season. Congratulations. One other NBC Sunday Night Baseball thing, Jordan. We got the NBC Sunday Night Baseball song, intro song. Did you listen to this?
I haven't heard it yet. So this might have to be, is this going to be Ugla? Good, bad? What's it going to be?
let me spare you the trouble there, buddy. It is awful. It is the first big miss by NBC in their Sunday Night Baseball soiree. It is brutal. The Zach Brown Band is not everyone's cup of tea. I think they're fine. That is a genre of music I do enjoy. I don't love them. This song, the pacing of it is all out of whack. Just when you think about you're on rhythm tapping your foot, it zags in another direction. It is about as incomprehensible of a tune as I can remember. And the worst part about it is that I remember almost nothing from it. It's like it was both bad and not particularly memorable. Maybe it will grow on me, but I hope that I have faith that NBC, the network that allowed the world to experience Round Ball Rock, I thought they were going to do something better than this. You know, I expect more from them. And so, Jason Benetti, I know you're not listening because you're so busy, but if you are listening, why don't you sing a song?
I will soften the critique, not about the song because I haven't heard it yet, but I did tune in for this blowout last night and it was delightful. We got Andrew Jones on there, CeCe's on there. We got Corey Kluber was a strange choice, but offered some interesting insight. And Jason's the best. So still enjoying Sunday Night Baseball, but it sounds like I'll need to skip the song. Let's go to Los Angeles where the Dodgers, ever heard of him? They took 2 out of 3 over the Rangers. Friday night, Max Muncy hits 3 homers, including a walk-off. That was pretty good and a good way to make up for Edwin Diaz blowing his first save as a Dodger. On Saturday, Emmett Sheehan was quite good. Jack Leiter was quite bad. Dodgers win that one. But the Rangers bounce back on Sunday. Don't get swept. Otani homers again. He homered Saturday and Sunday. But DeGrom was terrific. Roki walked 5. That is a thing that he does. As the Rangers win 5-2. I will give credit to the Dodgers, though, because even in this early season small sample chaos where the entire American League has the same record almost, somehow the Dodgers, they have the best record. No matter how small a sample you want to do, whether it's spring training, whether it's like, nope, they're still the best at 11-4. And I appreciate that because that, as I mentioned, I'm doing the power rankings this week. I know I can put the Dodgers at 1. Everything after that, I have no idea what I'm going to do, But we're going to figure that out after we stop recording. So credit to the Dodgers for taking another series. They have the best record in baseball.
Could you do Twins and Blue Jays? Because I'm learning more about the Sunday Night Baseball song right now.
I would love to. Thank you for giving me the ISO here for the Twins Blue Jays. Twins, as we just mentioned, they mopped the Tigers last week. They head up to Toronto. They lose the opener. Patrick Corbin pitches for the Blue Jays. He was okay, but that's not a good sign for the Blue Jays. Blue Jays do win that one with a bunch of runs, though, 10-4. But then Joe Ryan is fantastic on Saturday. Homers from Brooks Lee and Trevor Larnach. And then on Sunday, Max Scherzer gets blasted. 8 earned runs in 2 1/3. And Taj Bradley is terrific. Taj Bradley deserves your attention. This dude has been one of the best pitchers in baseball this year. He was the big return in the trade for Griffin Jacks at the deadline last year. You trade a talented reliever for a controllable starter. That's kind of the idea. He looks great. He's throwing ridiculously hard. Very talented. Showed flashes with the Rays. And now looks like he could be an impact pitcher for the Minnesota Twins. The big thing from this series, though, is that another Blue Jay got injured. That's George Springer, who broke his left toe from a foul ball. That sucks. Sounds like it's not super serious, even though he did fracture it. He also said, I expect to be back soon. He wants to keep playing through it. So hopefully this isn't a lengthy absence similar to Alejandro Kirk or the many other pitchers that they're missing. But yeah, the Blue Jays, yikes. They are now, I guess their record is 6-9, which isn't that bad, but is worse than a lot of the other teams in the American League. And so we can be, and because their whole team is injured, I think we are at least mildly concerned. As for the Minnesota Twins having the best record in the American League, I don't know what to say about that. So, but yeah, Taj Bradley, though, he's good.
Keep going. I'm still learning here.
Still learning. All right, well, I'll go to Seattle, a series that is not yet complete. This is a very strange 4-game set between the Mariners and the Astros. We have a few of these this season, a Friday to Monday wraparound situation. And that is the situation in Seattle this weekend. And the Mariners' vibes could not have been worse going into this series. But a good way to get right there is to beat up on the Astros, who are a total mess right now, particularly on the mound. They are sort of similar to the Nationals in that they are scoring a bunch of runs, but they cannot prevent them whatsoever. Some of that has to do to injuries, and some of that has to do with their pitchers pitching very poorly. That was the tone that was set right away on Friday as Tatsuya Imai does not get out of the first inning. He throws 37 pitches to record one out. He walks 4. Randy Rosarena hits a huge go-ahead homer, his first of the season. Josh Naylor scores his first run of the year. Yikes, that's probably not a good sign, but good to see him finally score. Yordan homers, of course he does. He homered in the next game, too. Mariners win that one 9-6. Game 2, Castillo and McCullers are both very bad. Yordan homers again. Julio Rodriguez, a gigantic home run to tie the game to center field later, his first of the year. But the Mariners walk it off late as Brian Abreu struggles. And then on Sunday, Logan Gilbert is terrific. Another Astros pitcher, in this case Cody Bolton, leaves injured. And the Mariners win 6-1 with a chance to mop on Monday. We will see how that goes.
Jordan, Ichiro statue. Let's talk about it.
This was like, there was a play recently in the NBA where I think it was Donovan Mitchell. There was some like half court buzzer beater that was waved off at the last second because the ball was still in his fingertips. That was this Ichiro statue catastrophe happening right after we recorded our Ugla for the week, as the Mariners unveiled a new statue of Ichiro Suzuki with his iconic pose, holding the bat out in front of him, readying to collect another base hit. However, when the statue was revealed with the, I guess they took the cover off of it, that bat that I am referring to was not in good shape. In fact, it was basically completely bent. And so I believe they've already fixed this to some degree, but this is pretty up there on a that can't happen, I would say.
It was very unfortunate because we love statues and it was cool to have Ichiro get his moment. But boy, oh boy, is this a clip that we will be remembering and watching for quite a long time. Pirates taking 2-3 over the Cubs at Wrigley Field. They were close to the sweep with a Brandon Lau grand slam and O'Neill Cruz fifth homer of the year, up 5-0 on Sunday. But the Cubs battle back. Carson Kelly walk-off single. They avoid the sweep and win 7-6. Still, all things considered, a good weekend for the Pittsburgh Pirates, who won 2-0 in Game 1 on Friday, 4-3-11 in a very disgusting, ugly game on Saturday. And the Buccos, they're hanging in there. They're looking like a real baseball team, and that's all we can ask for. Angels, 2-3 over the Reds. Taking the first one as Chase Burns is bad on Friday. Game 2, both teams walk 9 guys. That is 18 if you add them together. Reds win 7-3. Game 3, Jose Soriano, 7 scoreless innings, 10 Ks. He has had a phenomenal start to the year.
Historic by some measures. And I think I'm trying, by the way, call to action here for the listeners. I have not yet started my arbitrary, specific, enjoyable stats thread yet for 2026. I'm looking for the right one to kind of set the tone. There were some Jose Soriano ones floating around that I considered using. This one here from Angels PR. Jose Soriano, the first player in American League history to pitch 6 innings with 1 or fewer runs allowed and 3 or fewer hits allowed in each of his first 4 games of a season. It's not too complicated, but that's pretty good if he's the first in American League history to do that. So maybe we will use that one. But if you've seen another stat like that, yeah.
What makes that one arbitrary is American League history, right? Because you're cutting the league in half.
And now I like have to go find out who the pitcher was that did that for the National League. It's like, who are we leaving out here so that you can make Jose Soriano look good? But he's stuff has never been a question with that guy. And if he's going to throw more strikes, he is going to be one of the best pitchers in the league. Like and if he can stay healthy, which has also been an issue. The D-backs take 2 out of 3 over the Phillies. Mike Soroka strikes out 10 in the series opener, as they win that one. Taiwan Walker was like actually kind of okay, which is nice to see, even after he gave up a leadoff home run to Ketel Marte. Schwarber and Harper homer on Saturday. And then game 3, kind of an interesting situation. Andrew Painter is scratched due to a migraine. However, he does end up pitching 5 innings in relief in this game. He said afterwards, like, yeah, I needed to pitch so that we didn't end up having to make a roster move or someone had to wear it. And that's good teammate. However, the Phillies do not score enough runs as they drop this game 4-3 and lose this series. 3 1-run games in Philadelphia. Nice little series win for the Snakes.
This is a sneaky important moment for a young player. Fair or not, young guys have to earn their respect. And there are things like this where by pitching through a migraine, Andrew Painter is ensuring that someone currently on the roster does not need to go to Lehigh Valley. Like, that is the type of thing that keeps money in people's pockets. And I think in a way will earn him just as much respect as like throwing 8 innings shutty. So good on Andrew Painter for kind of gritting this out. It sucks that like this is how our sport works and you have to do it. But it is, I think, an important moment early on in Painter's career. Orioles taking 2 out of 3 over the Giants, dropping game 1 in those new beautiful City Connect uniforms, but bouncing back to win games 2 and 3. Gunner with a homer off Logan Webb, his 6th of the year. Boy, oh boy. Love that. Hot start for the O's shortstop. Anthony Nunez is a name to know out of the Orioles pen. He has been nasty. Kind of a wild story there. He was in the minor leagues, then went and played college ball at the NAIA level, where you are allowed to play even if you were already in the minor leagues. He was in the minors the first time as a position player, went back to NAIA, made his way back into pro ball as a pitcher, and now he is disgusting out of the Orioles bullpen. Very fun story. Game 3, Cade Povich was brilliant. 6 2/3, 1 Ernie. And Samuel Basayo hits a homer as the O's win 6-2 again. Devers looks really bad at first base defensively. Hit a couple of weird plays over there. Adley Rutschman is on the IL. The Giants remain odd, and the Orioles are one of 25 teams just trying to get through April. Speaking of teams just trying to get through April, series win for the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah, they survived a couple more Jordan Walker home runs as he is up to an MLB-leading 7 long balls on the season. But this weekend did not start off great, as Dustin May pitched quite well against the Red Sox. That must have been not particularly fun for the Red Sox or their fans. But the Red Sox got it done after that. Two easy wins. Good to see Ranger Suarez get back on track with a good outing on Saturday. And then 9-3 win on Sunday. Brian Bayo looked quite good. So Boston, again, it's not going awesome for them to start the season. But I think that was a nice little that's a series you kind of got to take care of. And even doing it on the road, that was nice to see. We finish in Kansas City, where the White Sox and Royals split. A four-game set. White Sox win 2-0 on Thursday. Royals win 2-0 on Friday and Saturday. And then a White Sox bullpen game. Nine different pitchers somehow get the job done as the White Sox win 6-5 on Sunday to split the series. Takeaway here, the White Sox offense is atrocious. And spoiler alert, they're going to be 30th in my power rankings. I will put them behind the Rockies. I think that they have earned that with what they have done
such
offensively.
Courage.
And also, frankly, I think that speaks to kind of where the Royals are at, where they haven't really gotten going in any sort of meaningful way at this point, particularly offensively. So Royals are, they're okay. They still got a path here. But yeah, the White Sox, we should mention they're bringing up Noah Schultz, which is exciting, who's one of their top pitching prospects. It sounds like Sam Antonacci may be coming at some point soon. We'll see. They can't hit right now. I mean, their offense has just been atrocious, and their pitching has not exactly been anything special. So White Sox aren't very good. Royals are just fine. No mop in Kansas City. Jake, we are just about done here. Anything else you want to talk about before we say goodbye?
Went to the hockey game yesterday, Jordan. What can't he do? Much. There's much I cannot do. I covered a non-baseball game for the first time in my career, in my life. I walked over to Capital One Arena. We still call it the phone booth, MCI Center, real ones know, for Alex Ovechkin's last game, last home game. He's been on the Caps for 21 years, one of the greatest hockey players of all-time leading goal scorer in the NHL. So I went over to write about that scene. You can read that at Yahoo Sports. I tweeted it out. It was super interesting, Jordan, just to like cover a different sport, the things that are the same, the things that are different. Nothing happens pregame because you can't like stand on the ice and talk to guys while they take hockey BP. It's cold in there. Not to sound like an idiot, I've been to hockey games before, but like you're typing slower. Like you are genuinely typing slower because your fingers are colder. All in all, it was a fascinating time. Ovechkin has like said he's going to make his decision in the summer. And so the Caps had to thread this super fascinating needle of like saying thank you and goodbye, but also not pissing him off by like retiring him before he's ready to retire. And so it was just very interesting. Should read what I wrote. I enjoyed it. Happy I got the experience. And yeah, I was able to cover that game objectively without wearing my Sabres hat.
That's good. But we can throw those Sabres gear right back on. The postseason is coming up, folks.
Hocktober.
Hocktober is here. We're excited to be invested in the hockey outcome. We will see how that goes. All right. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to Andrew Hartz and TJ Brassel for producing. As always, we will be back on Wednesday, Jackie Robinson Day. I got some Jackie Robinson stuff cooking that I'm looking forward to sharing here on the show. But until then, you can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. And thank you all for listening. And we'll see if the Yankees or Mets can win a baseball game before then. Bye.
Happy birthday to the two most important people in my life, my wife and Sabres captain Rasmus Dahlin.